Good to go?
Yeah.
Welcome to the Unemployable Podcast. We have Andy Foe here joining us, and Danny. We're just having a great talk about discipline, something Danny has mastered, right?
Yeah. Watch this, I can blink without...
Without blinking.
I can blink without blinking. Yeah, I do like discipline.
No problems at all this morning. Total smooth transition.
Yeah, Andy was a bit late.
It happens. We all fall off.
But other than that, it's been a great morning.
Yeah, one of the things that we were talking about originally is I would see your videos. They kind of seem like motivation, focusing on foundation, obviously like discipline. How long have you been putting those videos out? Or when did that start?
On and off since 2020.
Okay.
And I've always, that's what I enjoy using social media for. So it's like tattoos, motivational stuff. So I feel like if that's the stuff that I like put that stuff back out, you know, kind of like pay it forward. When I first started doing it, I just got a pool built in my house in Las Vegas. And it was like in the wintertime. It was like November, December. And my videos came from like my cold plunges.
Okay, yeah.
So I would just wake up, and part of my discipline at the time was like, all right, you're going to do a 5-minute, 10-minute cold plunge in like, you know, 32-degree weather. And I would take my shirt off. I'd say something motivational that I felt was, you know, that I was simmering on, and then I'd just jump in the water. And that was like my thing that I would just do on a regular basis. And then sometimes it would come from like after a run or after a workout. And I've always used workouts to like help me process through my thoughts, my ideas, my frustrations, that like it helps me get to like a clear state.
Right.
So it's like, what kind of gem can you extract from that activity?
Yeah.
And then it's like, just share it out into the world because somebody needs it.
So when, because obviously you had your tattoo channel, and this is where you're posting the stuff on the same Instagram, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Is it more than just Instagram?
I'm starting to like put some stuff on YouTube also. TikTok's just kind of like a throw up of my Instagram if I remember when to do it.
Right.
I don't have discipline there.
Yeah. And then when you started, was it just like, hey, I have this idea, like maybe I'll put this on the platform and see how it goes?
I was finding like just tattoos weren't enough.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many great tattoo artists that do amazing work. It's like, what makes you different?
Right.
And once in a while I would share like, here's a motivational video, or here's like a run that I really enjoy doing. And I got more traction from that. And I actually started to build clients from it. Like I have clients who come to me because we connected because I run, or I post the Daily Stoic, or I work out because I'm a father.
Right.
So I just started to share more of who I was, and it became relatable. So it was like, all right, I'm just going to put out who I am out into the world.
No, I think that's so important. And it's just kind of like become a part of social media marketing. Mm-hmm. I mean, what do you think about these artists that want to stay anonymous? Like, oh, I just want the artwork to like speak for itself. I'm not going to give anything more than that, you know, on marketing.
Yeah, I have some artists that talk to me about that. And there's a level of that that is like commendable.
Right, right. Like,
just pure art, let it speak for itself. And there's like a struggle within that. But I don't feel like you have to struggle that hard. Like you can still be all about the art, but it's like, who are you? And I think with tattooing, people want to go to an artist for the art. Yeah, they may go to you for your art, but it's like, who's the person that's going to permanently mark me? Like, what's that experience going to be like?
Because
they have to sit with you in a chair and like tolerate all your shit.
Yeah.
So it's like, are you a tolerable person? Do they like you? Yeah. Are you personable? And I've known of some stories of people who have amazing tattoos by some tattoo artists that are anonymous, as you say. And they don't like their tattoos. They don't like the experience, or they laser it off because it's like, well, I don't want to have that person on me, that energy. So they laser it off. So there's not a need to do it, but I feel like it's going to get you out so much further, and you're going to get what a terminology I heard was like your soulmate client. These people are going to see you and like they resonate with you for who you are, what you do, what you say, what you believe. And it's like, I love who you are. Plus your artwork's dope. Let me get tattooed by you.
I think you're so right. It's almost like the more of yourself you advertise, the more specific your clients become, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So if I'm putting out that, like, you know, I like working out, I like shoes, I like building businesses, all this stuff, you're probably going to get people that also like that stuff.
Yep.
Or some of it.
Yeah.
You know, and when it's just the artwork, it's kind of like a roll of the dice.
Yeah. You'll equally push some people away.
Yeah.
Because it raises some things about them that they may not like, or they don't like those perspectives that you share. So then they don't want to get tattooed by you. So that's fine. Like, I lose followers all the time. I gain followers all the time.
Yeah.
But the people that I have now, like, they're my people. You know, your people are yours. Like, they're always going to resonate with you. And there's no reason to kind of, like, hide parts of yourself.
Right.
Because you're kind of missing out on, like, those interactions with people.
Yeah. That's why I came to you.
Yeah?
Yeah. You said I'm an artist in Miami, a great artist. But there was a weird energy every time I was there. Like, I knew I was going to go there. I wasn't going to talk to him much because he, you know, was a, you know, didn't really talk much. But there was also a lot of animosity between the shop and the employees there, and I felt it. So that was, like, a big thing. I'm like, listen, I love this guy's work. You know, in the future, I'll probably maybe go check him out because I do respect the art a lot. But that kind of drove me out.
Yeah.
And that's why I came to John. So I kind of appreciate it now.
What would you advertise about yourself?
Probably just what we do on the day-to-day because I feel like that's who we are.
Yeah.
We do everything people see on camera is normally what they'll feel and hear.
Mm-hmm. You're actually really good at that, especially like on your stories, like sharing the vibe of essentially what your life looks like.
Yeah, of course.
It looks fun.
Yeah, everyone, you know, it's and...
Well, it helps that you're a videographer and editor. Yeah. I'm like, damn, Danny's stories are sick.
But I also don't like giving a facade of a life I don't live.
Yeah. Right.
So I try to keep that balance even when I'm at home, like even if it's just like playing guitar or stuff like that, because, you know, people like to resonate with people. And we have a lot of people that thankfully doing what we do respect us in that way. And I do like to show them my life a little more.
You're excited about your life, though.
Exactly. Right. Oh, 100%. So I'm grateful for everything.
There's no facade needed. You know, that's the thing. There's a phrase or some things I've heard some tattoo artists say is like, social media is fake. And I think it's reflective of them. Like, what they would share is not true 100%. Or accurate. So, like, if you're wholeheartedly excited about what you do, I think that's a big part of, like, why in my stories I share the whole daily process of, like, I wake up, there's my protein shake, I draw, I work out, yeah. I go to tattoo, and, like, there's my family time, and that's it. You know, maybe if I have, like, I'm traveling to Fort Lauderdale, I'll share a couple of things that I've seen along the way.
Yeah.
But I'm excited about everything that I do, so I'm just going to share it, you know? And I think social media becomes easier when you get in tune with those things. And it's like, you may feel like, well, who's going to want to see that?
Right.
The people that care about those things, you know, and it's going to draw the right type of people to you. But it becomes less hard once you actually enjoy your life.
That's interesting. I haven't done that as much, like kind of share my day. Mm-hmm. It'd be fun to like test that out to just see like who appeals to what. Mm-hmm. You know, in the beginning I was like, oh, like I'm gonna share that I'm traveling, but I'll share it like a couple days after.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't get kidnapped, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
But like kind of like delaying, but I like your perspective where you're saying I'm excited about this, I'm just gonna share, who cares, it's not a facade.
Yeah.
This is my real life. Mm-hmm. You know, and maybe that could even be a good like intro for some people that are trying to show more on social media. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, just start with what you're doing, you know. Yeah. Take a picture of your protein shake or talk about what you're doing or what you're excited about for that day.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I would have some of the artists I work with, it's like, post more drawings, like post things that you're practicing on or that you're developing. And then it became like this pressure to post on social media that they felt like they had to draw for social media. I'm like, no. Take the social media out, draw because you want to, and share it regardless of where it's at.
Right.
And I remember seeing some artists over the course of like weeks or months sharing progress of the same drawing, but I like seeing that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because like, damn, like that's how much time and effort that it takes, that every day you're posting a little bit here and there. And that's what got me onto the idea of like, oh, I should draw every day and just like share it in my story.
Yeah.
Because people think like you get to this level of tattooing or business and that's it. But it's like, no, there's the process, there's the steps, there's a journey, the struggle along the way, that like if you think it's going to be that easy, like it's not. Yeah. So you're going to see me struggle with my workouts, you're going to see me struggle with my drawings, but like it's going to take me somewhere. But it's just for people to see that day in and day out, this is what it takes for you to see where I'm going to get if you follow me long enough.
Oh yeah.
Do you feel like there's a limitation to what you should show? Because there's people who, mm-hmm. in my opinion, overshare.
Yeah. So I don't share, I started to share less about family, and it's not that I don't love my family, but some things we keep more private.
Absolutely.
I was going through a phase where I was really working through like my personal shit, and I was like going through a lot of like psychedelics and journaling and meditation, And I wanted to share it because it was really helpful for me, but also I found it really helpful for everyone else going through their shit also. But then at some point, it was just kind of like curating, like, well, how can you, like, compact it and make it, like, enjoyable, or, like take the gems and the lessons out of it? So you're going to go through these different phases where sometimes it doesn't feel like it's too much, like you need to get it out. But then other times it's like when you kind of look back, like, yeah, maybe these things I could have kind of tapered down on a little bit. But at the end of the day, like, that's where you're at that point in your life where it's like, are you excited about it? Is this a big deal for you? Yeah. Just go through and share it, you know?
So you said psychedelics. Mm-hmm. You heard that too, Danny?
I heard it.
What was up with that? Where did that start?
I've always been afraid of it. I've always heard, I guess, good things, yeah, right? But I was terrified that I was going to be like having a bad trip, stuck in a closet, or kill myself or something. Yeah, yeah. I had a client who gifted me a chocolate mushroom bar, and on the back it said, like, take 1 to 2 pieces. You know, you may get a little buzzing, eat the whole bar and the walls may start to melt.
Okay. I was
like,
that's oh, what shit. It said on
that's
the,
what it said on the back. Nice. It was an Alice in Wonderland. Yeah, like,
I was just going to say,
yeah,
it's an FDA approved.
Oh. Made in Oakland. And, I just held on to it, but I had a friend who was like openly talking about it on social media, and I went to go see him, and I was like, I kind of like gifted to him in secret. I was like, hey, I think you may like this.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, perfect. You know me so well. I was like, you know about this? And he goes, yeah. Like, you know,
about magic.
People use this all the time. You know, they use it for therapy and healing through their trauma. And I'm like, yeah, yeah. And people use it for creativity. I was like, creativity.
Right. I do that.
Like, I want that. But down the line, I was like, oh, I have to work through my trauma to get through my creativity first. So my first couple of doses were like, you know, 5 grams, 7 grams. And I would say I didn't feel anything, but I was expecting that 70 show.
Yeah.
Colors and everything just like melting right. and warping. But I didn't get any of that. I thought it was supposed to like just hit you.
Well, how did you get to the point where you were like, I'm going to do this?
Having somebody that I trust, like
right.
already go through like years of trying it. I was like, all right, I trust you with my consciousness. Like, right. help me explore that a little bit more.
But you were looking to produce some change.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the creativity is what struck me, because he was like, you're an amazing artist. Like, and I was like, no, I'm a render artist. I just copy photos. And like, I know I want to go beyond that. I want to like start drawing. I had all this judgment around like what looked good, what didn't.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, this can help you work through that. But mushrooms, MDMA, ketamine, it helped me like get through these judgmental emotional blocks that came through my parents of like yeah. what's good, what's not. And after that, I just started to draw a little bit more freer. Then I just started to like share, because I was used to sharing finished products.
Right.
But now I was like, I'm just going to share the whole process. This is like the journey of being an artist.
So then you, from the beginning, were you taking it all the time?
No, it was like every 2 to 3 months, I would do a heroic dose.
Yeah.
Right. Of like 7 grams, 12 grams. And yeah. I was looking forward to those sittings.
Right.
It was in like a room where they were holding space and instruments and sage. And I was like, I felt safe doing it there.
So would you just go there for hours?
It was like a 6-hour thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you would go there with your blanket, your hoodie, your journal, and you would just sit there just like ready to go inward.
Nice. Yeah.
But then afterwards, when I felt comfortable doing it, microdosing came about. But I didn't realize that I was macro dosing. Like, microdose is like 0.5 gram or less. I was doing like 3 to 5 grams every day.
Right.
And that was just
I'm going to take an eighth and go to work.
That was my mode of operating. And like, yeah. I was relaxed. I was calm. There was no judgment in my art. And there was more creativity that was happening. Like, I was able to like, my composition was starting to change. Yeah. And I was really loving the direction that I was going. But like I was telling you earlier, I started to feel dependent on it for my creativity.
Right. So I was would like, you take it and then maybe like next day try to do it without taking it?
Yeah.
And you're noticing a difference.
Yeah. Then I'm like, yeah. Oh, I need the mushroom. I was like, oh, so you need mushroom to be an artist? Like yeah. You're not an artist anymore. So then I had to force myself to throttle back, to take it less and less.
As soon as you noticed that dependence, was that when you're like, oh, I gotta change this?
Yeah, because I knew that I was using it for anxiety. I knew that I was using it for creativity. And like, if I didn't have it, was I still going to be anxious and yeah. not learn how to control that without it? If I had to do a tattoo and like, I realized I ate my last piece of chocolate, like, could yeah. I not do the tattoo? Like, yeah. that's a shitty way to do it. So I just learned, I was like, I just have to come off of it. And then I realized the same thing with like working out. Working out was a way to like take off stress, anger, anxiety, but it's like, you're just going to go do burpees right now in the middle of an argument? Like, right, no, right, like, right. You have to learn to control your thoughts, your emotions, and your words in the middle of it, you know? So I was just observing and catching myself when it was working and then when it wasn't.
Yeah.
I want to take a few steps back. You said you had a lot of fear going into it. I mean, besides your parents telling you, you know, what's right and what's wrong and drugs are wrong, what was your biggest fear? Did you, like, deal with anxiety on a day-to-day basis? Did you have some maybe older trauma you were, you know, in fear of unlocking?
The fear was more so I was going to, like, have a bad trip and die.
Gotcha.
That was, like, I didn't want to take psychedelics because of that. Yeah. I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't know what was up here.
Yeah.
But the first sitting I did on MDMA, it was like four doses. It was like whatever. They were like, how much do you want to take? I was like, whatever the most is. And I was always going to go deep. So they gave me like a full pill and a half, a nasal dose, another pill, and then another nasal dose. And it was like a whole like long sitting. And I remember looking at one of the facilitators and she was like, you want to come be held? I said, yeah. So I just went and she kind of cradled me. And when I looked at her, it was my mom.
Oh, wow.
And I went through like this crying fit of like apologizing to my mom for all the things that went wrong. She was forgiving me through all that. And then she was like, do you want him to hold you? And it was the other facilitator. I said, sure. And then he cradled me and it was like my dad. My dad's been dead since I was 16. Damn. But I was having conversations to my parents through that. And it was like this, it's one thing to say you forgive your parents for certain things. It's another thing to like feel it.
Yeah.
And then once I sat by myself, I went under the blanket and it was just like being in the dark. And what I saw was like me in this dark room with the light shining on me, just kind of like crying and being upset of just like, you know, all these things of my dad was a super strict disciplinarian. Like if you got bad grades, if you didn't do your homework, if you said something wrong, like go pick a hanger. Like, come out.
Yeah.
I'm gonna break this on your backpack. I'm gonna hit you across the face. And I knew he was just doing that out of like love and care. But there was other ways you could have did it.
Right.
Yeah. You know, but that was the best that he knew. So I held on to that for a very long time. And it was at that sitting, this was like May 2021. Like I forgave him. I forgave my parents for like they did the best that they could. And once I let that judgment go, it was the first time that like I had a sheet of like 18 by 24 Bristol paper. And prior to the sitting, the ceremony started, I was just kind of drawing what I see in the room. It was a very timid drawing. But then after that, it was like a kid possessed. Like I was just deep breathing, grinding my jaws through all the MDMA. And I was just like, just scribbling. And like, it was the first time that I could draw without any judgment. And I would look at it. And prior to, I would judge myself for like, well, what the fuck is that? But I would see all the emotions and all the things. And then after that, I was able to paint more, to draw more, because I stopped caring so much about what the finished product looked like. Mm. I still care, but the process to get there was much more freeing.
Nice.
Yeah, I feel like we were doing like these art nights here for a while, mm-hmm. a bunch of artists, and like you're drawing and it's whatever media and blah, blah, blah. And, like, definitely relating to what you just said. Like, some nights I wouldn't even draw because I'm like, oh, I don't think I'm capable of producing a good product. You know, like, caring about the product. Mm-hmm. Oh, I care so much, I'm just not even going to participate.
Yeah.
And then eventually getting to the part where, like, I'm like, yeah, I don't care. And I'm just grabbing whatever, like, markers, microns, pencils, and I'm literally just scribbling. And I'm like, this is fun. This is like,
how does that feel?
Like being a child.
Yeah.
You know, like childhood. Like, yeah, like whatever. Like literally just drawing X's over things. Like, no. And then like, you know, continuing with that. But I can totally identify with having like your own judgments on your own artwork.
Yeah.
Right. And then maybe even expectations. And it just kind of can make you like freeze or like stunt the growth.
Yeah.
So you're experiencing relinquishing some of those things through this process.
One of the best things that has helped me between then and now is like I have a daughter. She's 5 and a half. She loves drawing too. She'll pull me into that space. And like recently, like I shared a video about it. She's like, Papa, can you draw? And like that's my opportunity to say yes.
Yeah.
And I'm working on that thing as a parent. I'm like, yes, I'll draw with you. And she'll draw on a piece of paper, I'll draw on a piece of paper. And she's like, can we switch? I said, yeah. And like, I'll just, it's like a collaboration.
You're like, no, I'm working on this.
This is the design.
Yeah. And then she'll draw some silly things on it. I'm like, just let that shit go. Like, just go have fun with her. And like, we make some really cool stuff.
Yeah.
And I'll hang those things up on my wall. And those are better painting, better drawings than like some of the paintings that I've done. Like, there's no life in that shit I did because I was trying to make it so academic and perfect. But this thing I do with my daughter, like there's so much soul and energy into it. And I find that way when I'm creating compositions for clients, it's like, stop trying to like think about the finished product. Like just let loose, scribble, make it a face, like whatever the thing is. And then like something comes out of that.
Yeah.
You release your inhibitions, your intuition comes out, and it's like, there's something now from the soul that's emerging. And like, I've been having a lot of fun with that, but it took work to like get there, to stop giving a shit about the process.
Right,
you know,
and enjoying it,
and just enjoying it.
How does that pitch sound to your client? Do you ever say, "Oh, instead of giving me an idea, why don't we let's sit down and make this ourselves"? Everyone's like,
"I actually do that." Yeah. So there's a few clients. I'm just talking about this now for the first time, but we have a concept of like white shirt and black shirt Andy. So prior to psychedelics, I've always just liked wearing all black. I think that's a tattoo artist thing, like so we don't get any ink on our clothes or whatever the thing is. But when I went through that deep MDMA sitting, I was wearing all black and I was just taking my sweater off, I was taking my shirt off. I just didn't want to feel like claustrophobic anymore. And once I came out of that hole, everything was just bright white and I couldn't hear anything. But all I remember was just looking around and people just watching me like just scribble and draw.
Yeah.
And after that moment, I just wanted to wear like white shirts.
Yeah.
So white shirt Andy is the realism Andy, like the work that you're used to seeing of like, I take photos together, I make movie sleeves, and like, that's one type of work that people can request. The white shirt Andy, we'll sit together and we'll do some breath work, we'll meditate, and we'll do art therapy together.
Yeah.
I'll sit there with a client, let them clear their mind. You have a piece of paper, we have the, you know, pens or pencils, and we'll have you just scribble something, look at it, and like a Rorschach test, what do you see?
Yeah.
And from there, just start adding to it without any judgment. Keep moving. And they have a general idea of what they want their sleeve or their tattoo to be. But there's something that comes out related to their tattoo that I'll now start to like pull ideas and shapes.
Yeah.
And there is a bit of a more lengthier creative process. But they love the finished product so much more.
Now,
so much going on. Sorry, Andy, didn't mean to cut you off. You're good. But I was in the zone.
What's going on?
Side conversations. Right? Then turn that one on. That's the backup. Okay. Then put that one to charge. Yeah. Well, it's facing mostly them. That one's fine. This is why we talk about backups before all this. So put those to charge and keep that one on, which is facing John and Andy, which is fine. Sorry, Andy.
You're good.
So will you do that with all your clients?
No, it's only for some. And every client, they'll go through the consultation process. 2 weeks before their appointment, we'll do a creative call. So we'll FaceTime and we'll start to talk about their ideas. Some clients are very set. It's very easy. And like, I'll black shirt it. You know, I'll just pull some reference photos. I may do some AI stuff. And like, I know pretty much what you want. Some people, they want something a little bit more depthy and they don't know what that is. And it's like, they trust me for the vision. So I have to explain the whole process. And it's like, your tattoo time, your session is going to include some drawing.
Yeah.
We're going to help pull who you are on the inside and put it on the outside. I've done a couple projects like this, and like it's some of my favorite pieces that I like to do, but now getting clients familiar with like, process. I don't know what your tattoo is going to look like until we sit there and draw, but it's going to be something that represents you. Yeah. You're going to be excited about it, and I'm going to love the process. Are you in? And they're already committed to it.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah. So they'll, like, come in early?
No, same time.
Oh, same time.
That's part of the day.
Okay.
Yeah, so they'll sit there. They'll talk to me about their ideas, their stories. And then we'll sit there, some breath work, some meditation, and then we start drawing.
That's cool, man. I've, like, gone overseas looking for tattoo experiences like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, one of the first places we went was Thailand. Just because I thought that was, like, the process. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought I was going to go. I was going to meet some monk and, like, you know, talk to him, and he would create a design.
Yeah.
And I did that, and he just, like, laughed at me, and he's like, oh, that's, like, a Westerner thing. It's not real, you know? But he was so cool, and, you know, he's like, but we can do, like, something like that.
Yeah.
You know? And he showed me the different prayers that they have and how they have it, like, in written form.
Yeah.
And we picked out different lines together and, you know, created something together. But
it's still a collaboration.
Still a collaboration. But I've always, like, me personally, like searched for something like that just because I think it's cool to create in that way. Not that I do that with my clients or to that extent. Like, I'll definitely talk to them, and it's more like, this is my representation of your idea. Mm-hmm. But it would be really fun to sit down and go, like, because you said you'll even, like, do breathing or, like, kind of clear the mind first. Yeah. Yeah, like clean slate it. Okay, what do we have now? And like move into it. That's cool.
Yeah. Do you ever find like clients are coming up to you like, yo, I had a shitty week. Let's do some work together.
Give me the pen.
No, I haven't had that happen yet, but I'm open to doing that.
Yeah.
You know, but I would have to keep a day open for clients to come in with their shitty moods. Yeah. True. But no, like they're still planning it, you know, months ahead of time so that they know like they're going to come in for like, it's more so the like a transformative experience.
Yeah.
Tattoo is just a product of that, but like I always say, there's something more that hurts more than the tattoo. It's whatever's going on in here.
Yeah.
Like getting tattooed is not normal. But to sit there with them and like, we've had some clients like, so you've seen the space that we do. It's very zen. It's very calm, but it just allows them to kind of just be and release. And we don't have any plus ones or any guests within the space because like the plus ones are always going to contribute their ideas.
Energy.
That extra energy is going to stop the client from really being themselves. So just by them being one-on-one, they can kind of like open up and share a little bit more.
Yeah.
And they make the decisions that are theirs. And it's a little bit more like freeing for them to get to that place.
Yeah. Yeah, I love the space. You got to see it, Danny. It's very like open. And
seen it online.
What? You have?
Yeah.
You got to see the video he showed me.
Yeah, yeah. You. But speaking of monk, like I used to be a monk too.
Yeah, oh, really?
Yeah. So in Southeast Asian culture, when you're when a family member dies, generally all the males, sometimes the females, like you go to a temple to be a monk, and it's kind of to like, you know, meditate on life and death, remember the person that passed away. So when my father first passed when I was 16, I went for 3 days, and that was kind of like an obligation as like a son to do.
It's expected.
Yeah, it's expected to do. But 2014, I went for 9 days just as like I wanted to do that so I could learn more about the culture and like.
So where did you go?
I went to the Bronx.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's several like Buddhist temples, you know, there's many Buddhist temples throughout the US, but that's one that I grew up going to, and I stayed with a monk there who spoke English. I specifically went to that one because he spoke English.
Yeah.
And I just asked him all the questions of like life and death, karma, why do we light incense, why do we pray, and why do all the Buddhas look different, why is there a snake around this one? I just wanted to ask all the questions. Sure. So just imagine like a skeptic, you know, sitting down like drilling the monk for questions, and at some point he's just like, I don't have all the answers. Like, and he would walk into my room at any given time and have all these books and papers laying out. I'm just doing research and like, what about psychics? And what about the Matrix? Have you seen the Matrix? And I'm just asking him all these questions. But I left there with like the understanding of like, all right, all we have is like this present moment. And I had the decision to either stay there and be a monk or become like the best tattoo artist and marry my girlfriend, who's now my wife at the time. And I just left. And since then, I've, you know, on and off been meditating, but it's just been one of like the biggest practice. And now I share that with clients throughout the space. So every morning we do breath work, like as a whole shop, 11 o'clock. We all sit in a circle and we do a little bit of breath work. We do a gratitude chair. And that just gets everyone into this quick meditative state so that they can just like drop any nervousness or anxiety. And it turns this painful, nervous experience into something that's calm and relaxing and just connects everyone. Like you've been in tattoo spaces, maybe here where it's like you're in the same space with all these clients and artists, but like sometimes you don't communicate or it's like, nice tattoo, you know? But here, like everyone is like, close, they know each other, you know, because of that little bit of share in the morning. So I just try to share a bit of what has worked for me with everyone else.
No, I think it's a great addition to the tattoo experience. And just like we were talking about with social media, like creating those additions, adding those, you know, flavors of personality, I think it just makes the whole experience that much more attractive.
Yeah.
You know, where like here, like, yeah, we tattoo, but, you know, you're really going to come to a comedy show.
Which is an awesome experience, too. Like, some people love that. Yeah. And, like, I do miss having, being in different tattoo shops with that lively experience. Yeah. And, like, some people come, like, you've had a bad week, you've had a bad day. They're looking forward to this tattoo. Like, dude, I'm so glad to walk into this door, and I know I'm going to have a good time.
Yeah, yeah. You
know, that's what it's about.
So, like, high energy. Whereas the other shop, it sounds a little bit more like your shop. It's, like, low. It's kind of calm, you know. But it's fun to have the different environments. Yeah. And it's fun to, like, guest spot and yeah. see what other, you know, environments other artists have created. Mm-hmm. You know, be like, oh, I like this. And sometimes even bring it home,
yeah.
you know, a little bit. Yeah. Like, I remember when, you know, I went to this one artist shop, the process of guest spotting was just so amazing. From, like, the communication, they sent me, like, a guest artist packet, which had, like, all the hotels, a map of the city, how to get to the shop, all the restaurants, mm-hmm. the attractions. You know, they had hit me up prior to see if they wanted to, like, schedule attractions. I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
So as soon like as I came home, yeah, dude, as soon as I came home, I'm like, we need a guest artist packet. We got to do this.
We implemented
those. And when I got that email, yeah. I was like, dude, this shit is awesome. It was so cool to be able to see it, like, broken down. And it's like, any questions? Like, no. Like, yeah. You guys answered all of that. We do something similar. Like, we just have, like, a welcome letter, and it's, yeah. like, pre-tattoo care, what to expect during. And one of the things that, like, we kind of throw in there is, like, there's a no-shoe space. Like, please wear your I best like socks that. Coming yeah, in. And then, like, the post-tattoo care so that we answer any questions prior to.
Right.
But once I saw that, I was like, oh, that's, like, genius to be able to, like, help them plan out their trip
yeah,
while they're out here. Because yeah. a lot of your clients are traveling in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now I get the incense. Now you get the incense. There's sometimes bad feet out there.
Don't yeah. You? Yeah, you told me the no shoe rule. I'm like, damn, I like that, bro.
Yeah.
I got some nice hospital socks, right? With the grip the on the bottom. On.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So going back to the monk, I don't know if this is probably an ignorant question, but can anyone practice?
Anyone can. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So
you could be a monk?
Yeah, you could. You'll have to shave your hair. Are you okay with that?
I'm in.
Okay.
It's yeah.
Your eyebrows?
Eyebrows?
Yeah. So it's beard, eyebrows, and hair.
I'm out.
Oh, wow. wait, why is that?
It's an attachment to, like, the physical self. Mm-hmm. So it's like shaving your head, like, that's a big deal for some people. Like, yeah. I can't get rid of my hair.
Yeah.
Get rid of the attachment to yourself, to your ego. All right, if you're bald already, like, what's next? It's like, eyebrows. Right. It's like, no, I need my eyebrows. Like,
yeah, how can I tell my emotions?
You're going to die anyways.
You guys will
you got a Whoopi Goldberg.
I'm going to have to sit with a Snapchat filter and, like, really, like, feel myself out for a while and tell my girl I'll be back in 3 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude, I always loved parts of that culture, you know? And, like, even, like, being young when I had the ability to travel, like, I was like, I'm going to Asia. I'm going all over Asia and experiencing that. You know, like Laos, Thailand, Cambodia, Japan, China. And getting in touch with people that had those beliefs, like, I just felt calm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, unlike a lot of things I've experienced, like, here in, like, U.S. Does that, you know, does that
yeah.
make sense?
Yeah.
And not only, like, meditation, but even just trying to, like you said, breath work, there's always been, like, a pull to that. Maybe it's from, you know, filling my schedule too much and, like, always being in chaos and, like, associating it with peace. But to bring that into a shop just to me sounds so cool. Yeah. You know, any aspect of that. You know, sitting in the circle. Did you see the picture of the circle?
I did not see the circle.
It looks nice.
May dude. I see the circle?
Bro, yeah.
Couple of the circle.
If we tried to do that with this shop, how do you think it would go?
Bro,
people be farting and
people
stuff.
Can't even sit in Indian style for a long time without, like, starting to stretch. Like, I can't
my
do
legs
this.
Are asleep.
Yeah. Like, come on, man. I got to draw. I don't think it's going to. I will try to get the shop to do it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Did you have any resistance with that?
So I had resistance afterwards. So, like, I say, like, I built my space on Mushroom, right? Like, right, I wanted a space that was calm. The music, some people say, like, oh, you listen to psychedelic music. I was like, I don't know that's what it's called. But right. It's, like, almost like spa music, if you will. And I just wanted something that was going to allow me to just not have any major distractions. Because I've worked at tattoo shops where everyone's hijacking the speakers.
Yeah.
They play something for, like, a few songs and someone else will skip it. And it's like, I'm going to just put my headphones on.
Yeah.
And then I just, like, yep. I don't get to connect with my clients. So I curated a playlist that, like, this is just what we play, and we shuffle it, and we slowly start to add some different genres in there, but it's mostly instrumental stuff.
Right.
And then when I was putting the gratitude share, the gratitude circle in there, it was great when we were having, like, a smaller group because it was short.
Right.
But then you start to have, like, 12 people in there, 16 people in there. And at some point I was like, is this too much? But then as everyone started to share, people were like, this is really nice. Like, yeah. I don't think I've ever found a moment of gratitude, or I've been so stressed, or my friend just OD'd and I'm just grateful that I'm still alive. And then you start to, like, learn the human aspects of everyone and go, oh shit, this is pretty powerful.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's funny, everyone's sharing funny things. Sometimes it's very quick and short. Sometimes it's really depthy. But I start to find like it's this chain reaction. Like the deeper someone else shares,
yeah,
then everyone's in it. And then when we break from the circle and everyone's stenciling and prepping, like people are just mingling and connecting. And we're just like building that human connection that I just haven't seen before.
Right.
But I go through it where I'm like, is this too much? Should I still do this?
Right.
But I realize that's when I'm having a shitty day and I don't want to lead the graduate chair. So then I'll ask someone else, like, do you mind leading the chair today? And they go, sure, I got it. And then when I sit there and I go through my breathing, I'm like, oh, this is why I do this shit. Mm. Because I've had shit that I've had to like release and let go. And that's why we just keep it very short. It's like 3 deep breaths. And then it just like forces you to just kind of ground yourself at that moment.
That's amazing.
So what does a day at the shop typically look like when you're tattooing?
Yeah, so we try to get everyone to come at the same time. So clients come in at 10:30. Mm-hmm. Between 10:30 to 11 is what we call like a settle-in window. So clients may come in late, or they may want to like finish their food or take a shit, or we give them tea, whatever the thing is. It's like you have that time so you don't have to rush. The artists normally get there around 9:30, so we have time to prepare. I normally like paint a little bit before, get ready for my appointment, and then 11 o'clock, the music changes into like this particular song that cues like, it's time for gratitude share.
Nice.
Yeah. Everyone needs that song. Over.
Wait, did the clients do it too?
The clients do it too, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
So
yeah.
We've got room for 6 artists. There's 5 of us. So sometimes it's 5 artists, 5 clients, and then we have our consultant there. So imagine like 11 people sitting in a circle.
Do they know what they're getting into, the clients?
They know it through the videos that we have online.
Yeah.
And you can tell some people are like, this shit's weird, right? But then like once they get into it, they're like, I was not expecting this, but I actually like it.
Yeah.
And it sometimes takes 15 to 20 minutes to do that. But then afterwards, everyone just kind of breaks off into their tattoo spaces. And then we work until like 7, 7:30. Nice. We were at lunch for our clients. So at 2 o'clock, we all eat at the same time.
Yeah.
And throughout the day, someone is going around filling up your snack basket. Always asking you if you want tea.
There's a snack basket?
You got snack baskets at every station.
What's a snack basket?
What heavenly place is this?
Beef jerky, Kind bars, gummy bears, coffee candy, waters. Man. And then there's a tea bar in the back.
Yeah.
And just eat. We want them, you know, like clients, they forget to eat. They're nervous. Right. They're about to pass out. We want you to eat as much of it as possible. And I found like the more you put, the less like they're not trying to like hoard everything. If you put like 2 things, they're like, I've got to eat all this.
Yeah.
So we just keep filling it up for them. And it's like, it just keeps their energy up.
Does each station have a basket?
Each station has a basket.
Nice.
And then like while you're in there, we've got eye masks in there too. So some clients think the shop's too bright. So then sometimes they just got eye masks and they just kind of lay down. A lot of people are falling asleep. You'll like tattoo and like someone snoring from the other side.
Yeah.
And it's great because it's like use numbing stuff. It's like, no, like this is the numbing stuff.
Right.
Like,
yeah. We just give out Xanax. No,
they go to sleep real quick.
Yeah. Our snack basket's weird, bro.
We got Lay's chips we give out to people. Do you feel like people are like more in tune with themselves and the experience? So they're like off their phones.
So that's the other thing too. We ask that you silence your cell phone and stow it away for the day. We put that in the welcome letter.
Yeah.
So that we have some clients, and for the clients who've been tattooed by me at other places before, there's resistance there. It's like, why do I have to put my phone away? Like, just trust me. I had one client who I was tattooing at, I'm going to say like a regular shop, and he could only sit for like 4 or 5 hours at a time. I was working on his back, and he would always play a movie. He would change the songs. He would just like constantly take breaks. Yeah. He was trying to distract himself from the pain that was happening. And it was his last session. I was like, this dude normally doesn't sit well, but we were finally in the space.
Your space.
Yeah. And when the consultant told him about the no phone thing, he was like, no, I need to have my phone. I need to have my headphones. I was like, we just need you to trust this process. He goes, well, I don't feel safe. Like, I don't know where I'm at. I was like, you can have your phone near you. I'm just going to ask that you don't use it.
Yeah.
He sat for 9 hours.
Damn.
No swelling, no redness, no bleeding. And when he came to, he was like, this is the best experience I've ever had.
Wow.
And we've had a lot of clients like that. Like, and I remember when I was getting tattooed by my brother, and I would feel the pain, and I would just look because I'm trying to watch and learn how to tattoo. It would swell. It would get puffy. It would bleed a little bit. And then there's times where I would, like, have a conversation with him. I would get lost in it. And then I'm like, it's not swollen. It's not bleeding. I was like, let me think about this. I was like, yeah, this shit hurts. And then it would start to swell. Mm. So there is a physiological response that happens when you say, like, something is painful.
Yeah.
You know, your body will send signals. It'll send respond, cues for that. Yeah. So we try to get people to just kind of disconnect with any distractions. So we say, silence your cell phone, stow it away, put the books away. And it just kind of forces them to kind of go inwards. And you're either sitting there communicating with your artists and just like connecting, or you just kind of go in, get deep rest. And some people are just falling asleep. And it's just so much easier to work when they're not swollen, they're not bleeding, yeah. and they just sit better.
Yeah. It's amazing. Those like natural distractions are the best. Because I've even had it like here, you know, it's like open atmosphere. So everyone's talking to each other and like telling stories and whatever. And when the clients like get involved with that, it's just such a better experience. Because they're telling their part or they're just laughing or, but it's like a whole group energy that's going around. And everyone's day, I feel like, is just faster.
You're fully present in that experience. You're not avoiding any of it.
There'll even be times where, like, it'll be going on for an hour or two, and I'll have gotten an hour or two of the tattoo completed and not really remember, like, doing a lot of it.
You're in flow.
I'm zoned out.
They're zoned. I always say, like, they're not, like, zoning out. Like, they're zoning in.
Yeah.
Like, they're just, like, focused on here, and it's like, this is what we signed up for. Right. As the artist, as a client, it's like, I'm here for this. But, like, most clients, they come in, they go, fuck, I'm about to get tattooed right now. This is going to hurt. And, like, get my headphones ready. I'm going to get everything ready. And then, like, they're just, like, fighting this thing that they signed up for.
Right.
It's like, it doesn't have to be this painful experience.
Right.
Well, but to submit to that, someone sometimes has to guide you through that.
Right.
You know? And part of that is, like,
take your phone away.
Yeah. And then also, like, we tell them, like, don't cross your legs. Stop holding your arms like this. Like, just try to relax. Easier said than done.
Like, open up.
Yeah. But when you kind of guide them to, like, relax as much as possible, they just kind of melt in a little bit. And then they just focus on their breathing because that's all that they can do.
Yeah.
Music kind of helps them tune in. It just makes my job so much easier. Like, I rarely have clients that tap out or ask to stop early. It just makes it easier.
Man, we should do, like, one of those days here.
You want to try one of those days?
1,000%.
I'll give you the playlist.
Yeah. Please do. give me the schematics, baby. I want to see, and we'll talk to our clients that, you know, we feel like would be in for, or maybe we even post about it.
Yeah.
Because, and it's not, you know, I honestly, sometimes we come here just as a manager, you can, you know, be stressed sometimes, and man, that'd be so nice.
You're like, we did it, Andy. He like looks at the Instagram. It's just a bunch of scribble tattoos.
We're all bald. With
we're
no
all
eyebrows.
On mushrooms. Like,
it's the best day ever. Yeah. It's also 9 in the morning. We started way too early, man. No, but that's beautiful. I'm picturing it as you're saying it, and I'm getting loose in my chair here a little bit.
It is jarring for some people. We've had tattoo artists that come in, and immediately people walk in. They lower their voice and they kind of drop their head a little bit. They go, oh, like,
sorry.
Someone will move a chair. Sorry. Make too much noise. And they'll look up. They go, I make too much noise. I said, no, you're good. You're good.
They like get up and bow to you.
They'll walk by and they go, sorry. Like, you're fine. There will still be conversations going on across the room. Like, it's not like you don't have to be silent in the space. Right. So we'll still have conversations. We'll still laugh and do all that. But like, for the most part, like, we say, like, high frequency, low energy.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, everyone's just on a good mood, and everyone's just having a good time.
Because I've definitely gone to shops, because I'm loud a lot of times. I've definitely gone to shops where it's meant to be quiet. Yeah. And, like, I didn't get the memo. And I'm, like, screaming in the shop.
Yeah. Sorry.
We have clients like that, too, and it's like, you let them be, you know, because like that's their energy too. Right. And I'm not here to suppress your energy or your personality. And we welcome that in. And then like, we're just here to just be who we are and just have a good time.
Just hope they catch on to everything happening
like
around.
It's just an open space, like where every form of energy is allowed.
Yeah.
And free flow.
Yeah. We just keep the music a certain way. And like we've once in a while tried to like add new stuff in, and we'll play like different things on the weekend. I was like, this should feel right. And be like, no, like we can't. I was doing, a Ramones tattoo, and I was doing the stencil at home, and I was like playing the music. I was like, dude, this shit's awesome. Like, I want to put this back in the shop. But after 4 songs of stenciling, I was like, nah, I'm good. Like, even me, all the music that I listened to, you can only listen to it to so much. Yeah. That I was trying to find something that was like at any time of day, whatever mood that I'm in, like, no one's ever hated our music.
Yeah.
You know, like, they felt relaxed after it, you know, but you put, I like rap. I like metal. I like everything, but like I listen to that too much, or if I'm having an off day, like I don't want to listen to it, and I don't want to have that thing where everyone's just kind of like fighting for music.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think we all have a playlist like that. Yeah. I definitely have a calming playlist of songs I find and I just like get lost in it.
It's your go-to.
Yeah, yeah. My go-to Spirit Airlines playlist. Your boy needs to be relaxed on there. It's going to be a rough ride.
And then you've had the shop for 4 years?
No, I've had the shop for about a year and a half now.
Oh, a year and a half.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Nice. So it's still new. And it's been the biggest like growth process to like, I've worked with other artists. I've led some shops, but to be at one and like now you're responsible for everyone's like how busy they are. You know, you're paying payroll. You're responsible for everything. Like the time, the energy and the people management has been like the biggest challenge. And like, it's what we signed up for. You know, like you said, like I thought I was just going to continue being an artist. And everyone could kind of just like hold their own, but they come here to work with you and you kind of have to help them grow along the way.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely becomes a whole another job.
Yeah.
But I think you got a good thing going because like our biggest solution to that has been communication.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if you can get everyone together, even once a week, let alone a few times a week, to just kind of talk it out, it seems like everything can be resolved through that.
Well, communication is going to be your problem, and it's also your solution. Yeah. So we have this thing that we call like the Monday gathering, which is like our meeting time. We used to do it every Monday when we were just opening to try like hash out what's the shop going to look like, how are we going to operate. Then it became every 2 weeks. Now it's like once a month, and like it gets heavy. Like we want to talk about like, so we do the breath work. Everyone kind of checks in with where they're at, and then we talk about like things that are happening or changing within the shop. What are your suggestions, your feedback? And sometimes it's an easy day where we just kind of get through business. Other days it's like, I didn't like the way that this shit happened on this day. And like, I felt like you didn't listen to me about this and that. And then like, it gets really deep and personal, but it's like, where else are you going to get this? Like sometimes people hold on to feelings within workspaces where they feel like they just have to tolerate it. But it's like, I want to hear what your problem is so that like, I understand why you're fucking up all week and how I can be of better support for you. Or I want you guys to kind of understand where I'm coming from this week so you guys can help better support me.
Right.
So to have that open line of communication is important. And like, I've been at places where like, I didn't feel like understood, and then it just makes it harder to be within that space. So I do want to make sure like I kind of maintain a certain standard within the space, but at the same time it's like, how do you feel? Like, what do you contribute? What do you feel like is a feedback or something that we can change? What's doing well, what's not? And that's hard for some people to like take the feedback, but that's a necessary part for me. Like, I have to know where I suck.
Yeah,
I have to know what I'm horrible at. And like, some people are afraid to give that, so I encourage them. I was like, give me a list of like some things that like just aren't working, you know, and tell me some things that are working well too. Don't just complain about things
either.
Right.
Yeah, that's important. Because when we have meetings, like someone would just like throw in some stuff. I'm like, where is this coming from, dude? Like, why have you been, why have you been holding this in? You know, you're talking about, you know, maybe situations that happened weeks ago. It's like, I try to have that open conversation with everybody because I don't want that pen back. And then, you know, worst of all, you'll hear it. Or what I try not to let it happen is you'll hear from someone else and then things get convoluted when the source, you know, could have just been coming to talk to us and having that open, you know, because we're here every day. This is our family. These are our friends.
Yeah.
Like, this is our life. We don't have a social life here. So we're holding stuff back in here. And, you know, whether we know it or not, other people are feeling our negativity.
Yeah.
I've been there, so I don't want everyone here to have that thing. So I try to have, like, that sit down with them. But I think that's, like, amazing. I can do it every week.
Go ahead.
Our meetings have definitely, like, evolved.
Yeah. You know?
Like, one of our first meetings, it was like, oh, we should probably do this, like, to communicate as a shop.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, me growing up being to every fucking rehab on the planet and, like, therapy and whatnot, I was like, okay, we could do something like that. So I remember, like, sitting down for the first meeting and explaining, like, here – here's a space.
Safe
we're gonna
space.
Share. Yeah, safe space. We're going to share, like, what we want to improve on and move forward. Now, I won't say his name, but I remember someone raised their hand. I'm like, oh, nice, this is working. I'm like, yeah, go ahead. He's like, and I'll use someone else's name. He's like, yeah, I just wanted to share about Danny. And I'm like, yeah, what's up? He's like, I just want to say, fuck you.
And John's like, don't react. Don't react. I'm like,
bro, and everyone got up and they're like, well, fuck me.
Don't talk to my boy like that.
All right, here's how to change the next meeting. Yeah.
Change the playlist.
And then at the end, I'm like, I think this went well. You know, everyone got it out.
This doesn't leave this room.
Learning how to communicate is hard. And like, I learned that 2 years ago. And I broke down when I understood I didn't know how to really listen. So like, when someone was talking to me, like, I would hear parts of it. and I would start to interpret and bring up my own experience, yeah. and I would make assumptions, and I would be like, oh, so this is what you mean. It's like, no, that's not what I said. That's okay, so tell me what you mean. And they would try to say it again. It's like, oh, so that's what you mean. It's like, no, you're not hearing me.
Right.
So we went through this exercise. My friend who helped me work through the psychedelic stuff, he was like, okay, so this is the thing I do in couples therapy. Your partner has to say something to you, and you have to repeat it word for word.
Yeah, I've done this.
And I couldn't string together his 5-word sentence because I was trying to, like, put my other things into there. And when I understood that, I was like, oh, fuck, my brain's broken.
Yeah.
So I learned how to, like, write and take notes, kind of like you were in school. So someone would talk to me about something, and I would just write. And before I replied, I would have to read it. And I was like, oh, that's not what I was hearing. Yeah. Right, so I would actually read back what they were saying. Did I get that right? And they go, yeah. Okay, now let me give a response. Right. But it was such a lengthy way to communicate where I was just so used to just free-flowing in a conversation, but that conversation wasn't really productive because I wasn't hearing them. I was projecting, and they were projecting, and then it's just like, no one's fucking understanding each other. So this communication sucks. You suck. I'm not going to work together
anymore. You talk for a half hour, nothing.
Yeah. So learning how to communicate was really hard. So that's a big thing of, like, teaching the people I work with, which is like, even a thing of, like, they would share, and before I say something, I would have to be like, is there more? Yeah. And they go, yes or no. And I go, okay, it's my turn. And I would say something, and they wanted to say, no.
Not like that.
My turn. And then when I'm done, like, you can go. So that there's a respectable level of, like, conversation that's taking place. And, like, I wasn't taught that shit. Like, my parents were throwing things around the house, break brand new TVs, camcorders. So when I grew up and I was with my girlfriend, who's now my wife, like, I would throw my brand new phones, and she'd be like, why are you so mad?
Yeah.
Why'd you throw that? You know, I have to buy a new phone. I go, yeah. Okay, so let's talk about it now. And I was so upset that I didn't know how to, like, communicate, but, like, she helped me, like, break through that.
Yeah.
So now it's just like, all right, I see it, and everyone's like, you suck at communicating. I still need some work on it, but it's like, to maintain that space, it's like everyone just has to learn how to do that. It seems common sense, but it's not.
It is not.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not common sense. But I think that not only will it help you with, like, people around you, for me, it helps with my clients.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hearing what they want
is
a tattoo, right? And it gives me kind of better grounding to produce that for them.
Because then you don't hear them, and you're like, oh, this would be sick.
Yeah.
And then you get so pissed off, you're like, well, this is what you wanted. Like, no, I didn't want that. Like, that's what you wanted, right? You're just trying to sell them an idea. Then, like, sometimes artists have, like, canceled or just, like, burn the bridge with that client. It's like, well, fuck you then. Like, learning how to work with clients is its own level of communication that has to be developed.
And you've experienced that.
Oh, absolutely. I wish I could tell them. No, not you, me. I'm talking right now. No, but it's
do
really
you have more.
Yeah, because I do, like, a lot of consultations, and I'm not the artist, but I do know, like, who to give it to and stuff like that. So I try to help them, but I like giving my input because, yeah, I'm not the artist, but I'm an admirer of art. Yeah. So it's, you know, and I've had situations, maybe not even about the design, but other aspects of, you know, miscommunication or, like, even dealing with, you know, deposits and that being refundable, and just learning how to try to maneuver in a way because you want to be respectful, but you also have, you know, limitations for the shop and everything you can do and what you learn to do. John, thankfully, the way I've heard him talk to people is something I tried to implement in his calm, cool, collectness. Because there are, you know, I think we all know people, you know, take jabs at us, or if they misconstrue something we said, we're always going to be the bad guys of business. We're trying to take the money. We're trying to, but that's probably the, you know, the furthest thing of what we're trying to do. Yeah. I want people to come here, have an amazing experience, get the art that they want, or at least have their mind open to something that they would have never thought of themselves. So those conversations and those consultations to me is paramount, even when it's just through me.
Yeah.
Because I'm, like, the first guy they go through.
Yeah.
I'm boss one.
I think a big part of it is, like, educating the clients during the consultation process. Because they don't know better. They're going to come in strong arm, like, well, this is the person I want to work with. This is what they can do within my budget. And it's like, instead of just, like, feeling attacked, which is what some artists feel like, and they just feel like, well, this client's stupid, I'm not even going to answer this consultation. It's like, just educate them. They don't know any better.
Right? Yeah.
You know? So, like, you just sit with there and, like, go through the options and, like, tell them what's realistic, what's not. And, like, there are some times where we just kind of have to, like, shut down the conversation of, like, hold on, like, you're not listening, you're not hearing, like, we'll reconvene another time. And I've given the okay to, like, hang up on a client when they're too pushy. Mm-hmm. come back when you're more respectful, when you're ready to have that conversation. Because like it's sometimes like they don't respect your role. Like, you know how all the artists work. You know how to like what they can or can't do. But there's this level of like, I want to speak directly to John. It's like, right. John's got shit to do. He's actually working on a client right now who's been through the whole process. Like, speak to you.
If he's getting my money, I need to speak to him. Yeah. I don't know who you are, Brandon. But yeah, it is a lot of educating. And it's great when people are very receptive to it. Like, when you both leave that conversation, like, you know, or cause sometimes I'll get it from the artist. Like, yo, I can't deal with this person right now. I'm down to do it, but they're not understanding. Can you take over? And that's where I'm like, all right, here I come to be the Zen master here and be like, tell me what you guys first talked about. Let me kind of explain to you their train of thought, because artists do have a lot of shit going on, whether it's a good day, whether it's a bad day. So I have to come in the middle in between and just be like, this is what they meant. And I'm sure that, you know, this is what they can do. And I'm always, which I love that. I love that all the artists are like, can you please take over? Yeah. And most of the time it's a successful thing. And I feel like when the artist gets back into the, you know, into play of talking with them, everything is smoothed out to a certain degree. Like, they're like, hey, I didn't understand what you were saying. You know, because a big thing we deal with is people not understanding that we don't take other people's designs. Mm. That's way bigger than I thought when I'm first coming in. I'm like, would you take someone else's painting? And be like, no, but this is exactly how I want it. Just like this. I'm like, okay, well, we don't copy and paste here. Like, it's all about creativity. You don't want that. You don't want someone else's art on you. Some guy having, you know, the same tattoo on their bicep mm-hmm. that you have.
Yeah.
So this is what we can do. Make it fun. I always tell people, like, as much as you want to tell the artist, oh, this is what I want, really look into the design of the concept of what you want. Mm-hmm. Have some fun yourself. Yeah. Look into things you like. Talk with the artist a little more. Copy and paste is terrible. Like, you want to have that creativity. You want something that's yours, and that's exactly what the artist wants. Something that is yours and something that is theirs, something that you both connect on, which is a way more beautiful thing than just getting, you know, tribal that you saw, you know, that Randy Orton had or some shit. Nobody wants that.
Yeah.
But it's a big thing, and I like when we come to that resolution of it all, and I feel like that's how we keep them coming back, especially those people. I like dealing with I wouldn't say hard-headed, but the more difficult clients that are just come in with the mindset of, this is what I want, this is how I want, especially, you know, people who aren't local. They're like, no, I want this now. I want this today. I want this how it's going. It's like, oh, we got 2 days to work with here.
You're going to wear this forever. Let's take the time to make the best decision about it.
Yeah, we don't want to just, you know, give you something you're like, oh, this is so cool, I'm leaving. Like, no. It's between you and the artist. This is your baby here. This is their baby. Co-parent right now.
What speaking of wearing something forever, what was going on with you tattooed that guy's whole face?
Oh, right? Yeah, with Neil. I've never done a face or full head tattoo. I typically don't do any like semi-traditional Japanese tattoos. I typically don't do color. And we had this consultation come in, and Jasmine, my consultant's like, hey, there's this guy who really wants to do his face, really great guy. He's been through all this and that. He really wants to work with you. I was like, well, let's get on a call with him first and like find out what his deal is. 67 years old, retired. He was living in Seattle, got ran over by the Metro bus, broke every major bone in his body, died and resuscitated twice on the scene. And he came to Georgetown in Texas to do rehab. Physical therapy. And he just happened to stumble across us by one of the restaurants nearby, and he looked us up. He was a Buddhist also. He meditates, and he just liked the space. He liked the artistry. He liked the personality. And he had his full bodysuit done in 1993. And all he had left was his hands, his feet, his neck, face, and head. And he's always imagined it getting done, but he never pulled through getting it. But once he came to from his accident, he was like, what am I waiting for? I have to get this done.
Yeah.
But he just didn't know who. So once he stumbled across me, he was like, I want you to be the guy to do this. And I was like, I haven't done any face tattoos. I don't do color. Like, I can do it.
Yeah.
But is this what you want? And lotuses on his neck, colored peonies, some kanji on his head for strength and love. And then he wanted a Nichiren Buddha on the back of his head. I was like, can we just do it all black and gray? He was like, I've always seen myself in some color. I want this in color, but like, this is what I imagined myself to be. And I was like, this guy's 67, died twice, full body suit already completed. He's all in. I was like, I can do the work.
Yeah.
I was like, let me honor this guy by like doing it for him. And he was like, let's do it. And he booked, I think it was, was it 9 or 10 sessions over the course of like 6 months?
Yeah.
Did his neck first, his hands, his face, and
was the face last?
No, we did the neck first, and I kind of wanted to be like, are you sure?
Yeah.
And I was like, no, we're in. Like, next session is tomorrow. And I was like, all right. So, like, we're just going to start with the outline first. And then I outlined the flowers across his face, and it looked so cool.
Yeah.
And I was like, you sure you don't want to do this in black and gray? Yeah, I was like, no, I got to do this in color. I was like, all right, let's do the Buddha necks and, like, everything. I was like, he wants to do it in color.
Yeah.
So I did it in color. And
how was stenciling the face? Or did you freehand it?
I marked it on. Okay. Yeah. There was no way that it was going to fit exactly the way that I needed it to. But I have a almost like a reveal video that like I took, and it was him walking up to the mirror for the first time to see the outline. And he was like, oh, man. And the music cued a certain way. And to get his reaction, like, it was like a perfect moment. Like, he finally saw himself. And he was like, this is how I've always imagined myself to be.
Right.
And once I finished everything, like, he's just so happy with it. He feels complete now. And he joins that rank of people who are like fully covered. Yeah, everything's nice. There. But it was just so fun to like help somebody get through the past year or two of like this big life-changing event to now feel complete again. It was such like a powerful tattoo for him.
Yeah. There, for me. You don't, or I haven't like always gotten those experiences, but there have been a couple with tattooing, and it does, or it can you remind you that it can be more, right? Maybe more than like, you know, a quick walk in, something fun for the night.
Yeah.
Like this can be like a powerful experience where you're like redefining something for someone. Mm-hmm. And when you get those and you can connect with it, those are the ones that like fire me
up.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I've had a couple, whether it's with botched surgeries or scarification or whatever, people coming in, not feeling beautiful anymore or attractive. And then being able to tattoo them and, like, see them in front of you, like, change into someone else. Like, be comfortable in their own body and be happy. And they're in the mirror, like, dancing sometimes, you know? And you're like, whoa, you know? This is so much more than the drunk guy from last night, you know? Or it's just different, let's say. It's different.
This is that moment where, like, our career, like, it's okay to make people cry.
Yeah.
And they look in the mirror. And sometimes even it's just a memorial tattoo.
Yeah,
they just cry and they're just like, thank you so much. And like, the hugs are just different. They're just like, thank you so much.
It's for both
like,
arms.
Yeah, thank you so like much one. For the fist bump. Like, thank you so much. And like, we're really changing people's lives. And I think we just do this every day that it just becomes a job.
Yeah.
And we forget that sometimes, especially when I see like an artist like ungrateful for whatever it is. Like, this person's asking you to change them forever.
Yeah.
Like, can you just care a little bit more? Can you just like put some effort into this? Like, show up ready to go. You know, and like when we remember that, it's like, did you forget what it was like for your first tattoo to set it on the calendar and like to come in and like be nervous and excited? Like, what kind of energy did that artist give you? Like, show up ready no matter what shit you're going through. Like, which is why I have to like meditate and breathe and work out. So when I come in, I was like, I don't care what shit happened yesterday, but it's like, how you doing? Like, you ready for today? It's like, I'm fucking ready. And I'm just like, but I'm fucking ready because you are. Like, you know, and you. I learned that through my parents, and I learned it through my brother. I would see my parents, like, fight, argue, break things, and we'd be on the way to a party. They're yelling at each other in the car, and then they knock on the door, and the door opens. They go, hi! And it's just like, what the fuck just happened?
You're a psycho. Yeah. What's going on?
And my brother taught me the same thing. He was like, whatever you're going through, show up and just be a professional. Like, they're here for you. Like, come in and do your best. And I'm just like, got it. Like, this is an important thing for some people. Like, it's not just a job.
Responsibility that comes with that, but yeah, when it works out like that, it's just the greatest.
Yeah, it's so powerful. Like, I've had another client that was doing one of those art therapy sessions, and he was doing his half of his back, his neck, his chest, and several times in there, like, just broke down, just like cried, and just like, he's never had this kind of support or somebody was able to like transfer his vision or to kind of give him this moment for him. And it was just powerful, like, really, like, people, like, break down like this? Like, people cry in the chair? And it's happened with many clients of, like, thank you for caring. Like, I can see your energy and feel that, like, you cared about this. It's not just a job for you. And that's why, for me, too, like, I can't have headphones or my notifications are off. So, like, I can really be there with you. But I remember the days where it's like your iPad's on, it's like scrolling through notifications, yep. The phone rings, it's like, hold on, let me take a break. And then the client's like, all right, like he's out. Right. He's out for the moment right now. Yeah, you know, so attention. Like, yeah, so I want to be there for people because like I know it means a lot. And like I've been talking about this story for a while. Corey Flatmo mentioned in one of the interviews about like the tattoo gods. It's like the tattoo gods will give and they will take away. You know, like if you're ungrateful about it, like they would just take it away. If you feel like you're above and beyond this client or that tattoo, like you're going to see less and less appointments. And like, I remember feeling those moments of like, damn, like how come it's a little bit slow? It's like, oh, you're probably a little bit ungrateful right now. Yeah. But the moments that I'm really grateful, like I'm studying, I'm pushing, I'm posting more, I'm really caring about my clients. And like, naturally the consultations come in, the projects get bigger, like the sessions get better. So I just kind of look at it that way as like, my energy is important for whatever it is that I'm doing, you know? And if you come in half-assed, like you're going to get half-assed results, you're going to get a half-assed experience, it's not going to be good for anybody.
We talk about that so much here, mainly like in, like treat every walk-in, you know, like they've been your client for years, mm-hmm. you know, and how important that is. And like everyone should get the same treatment and it always turns into more clients, mm-hmm. yep. you know, it turns into happier clients and more tattoos. You know, I couldn't agree more with that,
yeah.
you know, and you said like clients opening up, like I love that. It turns into way more than, you know, a tattoo.
Yeah.
Like when you get to actually communicate like that, I'll even like, you know, making jokes, you know, it could either be like, we're joking about really dark things.
That's okay.
The client's like, wait, did that actually happen to you? And then they're like, me too. And yeah. I'm like, cool. Now we're having a real yeah. conversation. You know, or sometimes I'm just like, typically I ask my clients, you know, what they do for work or what trauma
That's the surface level to like the barrier to entry.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
once they can lower it, then it's just like, oh, we're going to have a good time.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
do we just become best friends? Yep.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah,
I'm always like, what do you do for work? And if that's not a good answer, I'm like, do you have any trauma? You know? It's like, we always get a good conversation.
Of course you've got trauma. Yeah. That's why you're getting a tattoo.
Yeah.
But we had that conversation about just opening for walk-ins. Like, we were both private studio in the yeah. beginning. And I've been having that conversation. And they're like, so what if someone just comes in, like, wants to do, like, a tribal tattoo, whatever? Like, it's like, if you're capable of doing it and they really want to do it, like, do it for them. But it's sure. more than just the tattoo and the money that you're going to get right now. It's going to be a long-term client because you did a good experience. You can probably upsell them on the designs that you want to do. And they're going to come back and they're going to send referrals. So, like, yeah. don't think about it as, like, just that one tattoo. I had one client that kept calling like 8:30 p.m. many years ago. And it was like, hey, I want to come in and get tattoos with my best friends. And I'm just like, we close at 9:00. Like, and he would just never come. And it would always be this complicated thing. And he kept calling, And then at some point I was like, if you can come here by 8:30, I'll do the tattoo.
Yeah.
And I did the tattoo for him and his friends. He kept coming back with him and his friends. Then I did a half sleeve on him. Then he traveled and got work for me here. And it was like, because I was able to cater to him and do that yeah. one tattoo, mm-hmm. he just came back and like, I've got more referrals from that. So it just works. Like, treat everyone like you care about what you're doing. I remember the days I used to beg. I was like, please, something come in the door. Like, yeah, tribal yeah. lettering. I'll do whatever it takes. Right. Like, just give me something. Because I was struggling to make $100 a day.
Yeah.
You know? But we forget sometimes when it's like, well, I need to make this much today. It's like, you ungrateful fuck. Yeah. Someone just walked in and you're above what they wanted to do. So like, it's better to have some dollars and no dollars. It's better to tattoo somebody than nobody. You know, like, we're not above them. Like, at the end of the day, we're tattoo artists. Like, that tattoo means something to them.
Mm-hmm. Tat gods bless you with that.
Tat gods, yeah, that's right. Yeah. And that's why you're here. You know, that's yeah. why you've been doing it for this long. Right. Like, everyone, like, if you're in it for the long run, like, you've got to look at it that way. And people will get phased out when you feel like you're above and beyond it.
Yeah. And usually you get humbled pretty quick
yeah.
you know, by Old someone else or pie. Something else. Yeah.
Yep. All these new artists like coming in and just taking everything. It's like, hey, it's going to happen because you're not going to want to take them.
Right. Yeah.
There's always, and you were talking about like, what were you talking about earlier? About like the economy of tattooing.
Yeah.
There's always people that want tattoos. There's always people with money. Like, are you going to be the one that's going to do the tattoos and like, help them out and get it done. That's been something that's like, I've been hearing artists talk about, you know, a recession or there's not enough clients. There's too many artists going around. I was like, there's plenty of people available. You know, you just have to find the people that want to work with you and just seek them out. You know, and again, money never disappears. It always just exchanges hands.
Right.
So it's just finding the people that like want your work and number one, getting yourself out there. And then just by like getting people in the door, and just asking for referrals. That's been like the biggest thing that's been helpful over the years.
Yeah, I think sometimes with the like the stress of the economy or things maybe slowing down, not being as easy as they should be, people are feeling like they're running out of time. Like, oh, like I don't have time to do this or that. Like I need to find someone and like bring in money, right? I need to bring in money. And sometimes they won't spend enough time on the communication, on the client. Like we can all be quick to just dismiss. Like, oh, this is a dead end. I'm not going to go there. Yeah. And like keep going. And I'll see that happen sometimes. And it's, if anything, it's the opposite. It's like spend more time with the person. Mm-hmm. You know, spend more time with your current clients, you know, with the walk-in, like be patient with them, you know, and bring them in, because that stress can almost make you unapproachable or have people kind of back off from it.
Yep.
So it's easier said than done. Like, okay, treat it like you're not freaking out about money, you know, and then you'll get the clients. But
yeah, it was when clients are walking in or they're doing a consultation, like our philosophy is like, give them the best consultation possible, because even if they can't afford it or they don't want to wait, they're not going to get that somewhere else.
Yeah.
So you're going to be like, oh, this consultation is pretty shitty. Yeah. I'd rather go back and wait or pay more because I know that they care.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like just nurturing that experience and like not forcing them to get tattooed either. It's like we have the availability.
Right.
But if you don't want to, like there's no pressure. Like,
right.
You're going to want to come back.
Yeah.
It's like, we do it really good here.
We have snacks.
We got snacks. We got incense. But like, there's a reason why you came to us in the first place.
Yeah.
Like, hear us out on it. We're going to educate you. We're going to listen to you. Who else has listened to you before? There's artists that like won't even go through an email because they're like, bad idea, not enough space. You've got a budget. It's like, that's just the entry information. Yeah. You know, hire somebody to go through all of that, because like, that may be your best client.
Yeah, I've even had like extensive emails where I put a prejudgment on the person. I mean, I'll still work with them, but I'm like, oh, it's going to be a weird day. And then at the end of the day, I'm like, that's the coolest client ever. Yeah. I'm trying to get rid of that a little bit more. Because who knows? It's weird talking to someone you've never met and like trying to think about their end.
Well, they're looking at you like, oh my God, it's John Nelson. And you know, there's like a certain air about it. So they're just trying to like come off a certain way. But then once you like, and you drop that barrier, and they're just like, oh, just a regular dude.
Yeah.
You know, then, like, you guys can just connect and it becomes a good time.
100%. Yeah. I think we're out of time. I think it's time to wrap up.
I love this podcast. I'm so calm right now.
Danny's sleeping. He's smart.
Yeah, it was so awesome having you on, Andy.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming.
Thanks for having me out here.
We're like, you know, I'm getting the cues that it's like time to wrap up. And
like, no, get away from me.
We might just have to do another podcast.
We'll do another one. I'll come back down.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Danny. Thanks for filling in.
My pleasure.
Don't forget to like, comment, subscribe. See you guys next week. Did all the cameras die? Thank you so much.
Good stuff, brother. When I heard you talk about being the Zen, what did you say? The Zen one? I was like, oh, he is a monk.
I too.
I see you.
Alright, let's get to the end. That's the
caption.
I said it was the only one.
Oh, yeah.